Welcome. You found the Love Mentalism Podcast, a podcast hosted by author Michael DeCamp that focuses on exploring, discussing, and promoting the deep concepts and practical application of biblical love. We hope you enjoy this episode and are challenged to learn to love more deeply. Jesus taught us and showed us the way. It's up to us to learn how to follow it. If more and more of us can do that, we will change the world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love Mentalism Podcast. I'm your host, Mike DeCamp, and I'm excited today because I have a couple of guests in the studio today, Michael and Rachel Anderson. And Michael and Rachel, we're going to tell their story in a few minutes, but there was a video that came on my Facebook feed recently, and it was their daughter by adoption. And it was the court hearing where she was officially adopted, and she was sitting there with a gavel, and she tapped that gavel three times, and smiling from ear to ear, she said, "I'm adopted." And I cried. And I think a lot of other people did. So it was a pretty exciting thing, pretty special thing. So I thought that we would go ahead and bring Michael and Rachel into the Love Mentalism Podcast studio. This studio actually has a couple of other names, but we will put Love Mentalism Podcast studio today, and we'll bring them in and let them tell their story. But before we get to them, I want to share a couple of passages with you because I think this is why they're here, because they have set for me a really great example of fulfilling these. Now, this doesn't mean that they're perfect. It doesn't mean that they don't mess up in other ways. It doesn't mean they're done with this. You know, like, oh, I never have to love anyone again. No, but it does mean that they, in what they've done, they have set an incredible example of fulfilling these passages. So the first one is in Matthew chapter 22. Starting verse 34, it says, "Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question, 'Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?' Jesus replied, 'Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments.'" And it is my view that what they've done in their adoption is they have, at least in that moment, fulfilled that second commandment of loving your neighbor. Because your neighbor really, folks, is anyone that is within the reach of your influence, within the reach of where you are, who you are, and what you can do. And so they have fulfilled that in the sense of this event. The other thing I want to point out is in James chapter 1, verse 27, it says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." And I think, you know, the young lady that they adopted was not an orphan physically, but she was an orphan in other ways. And Michael and Rachel, their hearts went out. I'll let them tell you the story. But their hearts went out to her, and now she is part of their family. So, hello, Michael and Rachel.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Welcome to the Love Mentalism Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So how did this happen? How did it start? Rachel, I think it started with you, right? What's the scoop?
So in, let's see here, November of 2020, I got a new student in my class. And I will be honest, I was not happy about getting a new student. It was November. By that point, most of my kids know all their ABCs. And, you know, I felt like I was starting over, especially since they said, this is a DCS case. And, you know, there I already had preconceived thoughts about what kind of child was going to be in my classroom. And
that, before we go any further, define DCS. What is DCS? For those who may not know, and keep in mind that this podcast is listened to beyond the United States.
Okay. So DCS stands for Department of Child Services. It could also be CPS. That's what it used to be, but they changed their name. And so they are a service in Indiana that goes through, and if they see something in a home that they don't feel like is beneficial for the child or in the best interest of the child with their safety in any aspect, mental, physical, they will remove that child out of the home and place them either with family or with another foster family, whatever is best for them.
Okay. And by the way, folks, if you hear a child's voice in the background, that is the person we're talking about. It's exciting. She's down in the other room visiting with my wife. So Rachel, okay. So you get this new child. You're not super happy about the fact you're getting a new one and that, you know, obviously there's some trouble there.
Sure.
So continue.
So again, preconceived thoughts wasn't good. But she walked in my room, super happy to be there. Very bubbly. I was told she had never been to school before. So I was, again, before I met her,
What grade do you teach?
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
Yes. Okay. So I was not too happy about her joining in. All my kids had known the procedures and we were in a good routine, and throwing in a new kid is going to kind of, in some points, ruin my day. But she was just super happy and easygoing. The only thing about her was she was super talkative, but which has not changed. But yeah, so she joined my class. Everything was good. About 2 weeks later, because of COVID, we ended up shutting down. And so all of my kids went home to learn virtually. And so in that time, we went from November to about February at home learning. And so I'd visited the home she was in a couple times, dropped off supplies that she needed, and taught her over the screen, obviously for online learning. Come February, we were able to come back into the classroom. And so she was in my classroom for about 2 weeks. So 2 weeks in November at home through those months, and then 2 weeks in my physical class in February. And she came in one day and told me that that she was going to be removed from the home that she was in from DCS. And so she was very sad and said that her family and her had been crying, and she was just very worried about going somewhere else. And so all I can explain it as is the Holy Spirit moved within me to comfort her and let her know that it was going to be okay. And so I grabbed a picture of myself, because I have 17,000 of those from all of my picture days. And I wrote on the back, you're brave, you're great, I love you, it's going to be okay. And I gave her my picture. So without consulting my husband, I went straight to the nurse and I said, hey, can I take this child? I just feel like she'd never been to school before. Moving her out of the school is going to be even more traumatic from what she's going to be experiencing. We're not licensed. Is there any way that we can take her? And so our nurse said, it has happened in the past. Let me give you her caseworker's number.
Well, let me stop you right there. Okay. And before we get to your reaction, because I think we're getting to that in a few minutes. I'm talking to Michael there. Rachel, what about that situation drove you to go to the nurse? I mean, like we were talking before we started recording that, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of teachers all over the country who have hundreds of thousands of more children who have troubled situations, and they don't go to the nurse and get permission to take the child. What drove you to do that?
The Holy Spirit, honestly, because I had had like one, maybe two kids in my last 8 years that I had felt the kind of push of like, I wish I could do something in this situation. Both of the times I didn't act on them, it was more so a want. And those two situations were fine. They ended up not being removed out of their home. But this time I honestly, it was the Holy Spirit moving me, because we had only physically been together for 4 weeks. That's it. I mean, we had our online, but she wasn't super consistent with it. So it wasn't like we'd had this huge history together. So I can't, I have to credit it all to God because it, there wasn't a huge relationship time-wise, but there was a huge relationship built in that short time. And I think that was the Holy Spirit and God preparing me for this.
Okay. So we're back to the nurse.
Yes. So she gave me the number. I contacted the social worker and left a voicemail saying, you know, I'd like to take this child in. And so didn't hear anything. I went, did I call you?
You didn't call me.
I waited till you got home.
I got home.
Yeah.
I just got home from work. I think I walked in, got through the front door. You met me at the foyer and you came up to me and you said, I know that this is very unexpected, but there's a sweet little girl in my class that may need a home. And I was like, what?
And by the way, I called and asked if we can have her. Yeah,
you can imagine my surprise.
So yeah, not one of my best moments.
Now, just for the audience's benefit, at this point in time, how long have you two been married?
That was 2 years ago. This May will be eight years, so about six.
About 6 years into the marriage. And you were dating a couple of years before that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So you had a little bit of time with your relationship to kind of learn your ins and outs, your communications and your relationship, et cetera. So,
I'd like to say this was a highlight of our communication, but I don't think so.
it was quite a surprise.
And he had known that it has been my desire to foster and adopt. Yeah. My grandparents did that for years, but it was never something that we together decided that we wanted to do.
No,
okay. I just decided for us.
It was sort of a unilateral decision this particular time. So, okay, continue with the story then.
So he... we had some words and
were they nice words? Like they love you.
And they weren't contentious or anything.
No,
like that.
Not at all.
I think it was kind of like a, can I have a day to think? Cause I didn't realize what kind of time crunch there was.
Right.
I just, you know, was mind blown that I come home and, hey, we might be able to take a child in if need be. And I was just kind of in shock. And so again, without knowing that there was any sort of time stipulation, I said, well, can I maybe have a day or two to process this?
Which is the opposite of my, my personality, whereas we need to make this decision right now. We're going to do this. And so it ended up working out because the social worker called me and said, you know, we have done this in the past. However, we have protocol that we have to go through, which is find family first. And then if no family, then we're going to put her with a foster home that we have used before that can take emergencies and things like that. So they ended up finding a home for her. And so they said, we don't need you. And so that was the end that we thought.
Yep. And in that moment, if I'm being completely honest, I was actually a little relieved at the time.
But you're still trying to get your head around it.
Sure. I was.
Not even including your heart, your head had to get around it.
Right.
Right.
Right. Now, deep down, I knew what the right thing to do was. Yeah. It was kind of a relief for me at that moment when it sounded like the situation had sort of resolved itself. Because like you said, I was just trying to get my head around it, as well as my heart, because at that moment it was like, oh man, I'm not in the least bit. I don't even know who this child is. I've never met the child at this point. And so it was like, okay, that situation at the time had worked itself out. That's what I had thought in that moment.
It was really just God giving you a couple of days to think about it.
What you had asked for, some time to think about it.
Actually more than a couple of days, but.
Yeah, continue with the story then. So what was next?
So she went to be in a foster home with some other parents, and I got a email from a school counselor at another school, because when she was removed out of the home that she was in, she had to go to a new school. So she and I ended our relationship there. And so I was contacted by a school counselor at another school district saying, hey, I have Emma here. The foster mom that she's living with said that she just would not stop talking about this teacher, and that she gave her picture and she just continues to talk about her. Would you be willing to do some like virtual visits with her so that she can have so that connection that she's been missing? And so, of course, I'm like, yes, I would love to do that. So that was in March of 2021. And so we did once a month. So we did March, April, 2 months in a row of doing a virtual visit. And then I got a call from that school counselor in at the end of April, saying that where she was at, it wasn't working very well. She wasn't getting along with another kid in the house. And they were just constantly together. And I think that was the issue, that they had no escape from one another. So they were fighting a lot. So the home was asking to rehome her. And so, so the counselor,
time's up there, Michael.
Yep.
Right. That's God saying, hey, I gave you enough time. So the counselor contacted me and said, I've been talking to the family. I've also been talking to the caseworker. Do you still want her? And, I think maybe my memory's not working very well. I want to say that this time I said, let me talk to my husband. But I don't remember if I did or not. I might've said yes, but double check.
I think you are getting that correct. Cause I do believe that you came home, or I came home and met you there. And I do believe that you had told me that the opportunity had represented itself. Mm-hmm. And while I still wasn't completely on board with it in my heart, I still knew what the right thing to do was. Just referenced James a little bit ago. It says that undefiled religion is to look after orphans and widows in their time of distress. And so I knew what Jesus expected of me. I knew what God expected of me. And while it was still hard for me to, in the beginning, and there is a turning point in my attitude. I promise we'll get there. But
you weren't exactly Jonah on the boat, but right. You weren't super excited either.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was just kind of in the beginning when we were talking about it, going through the motions, again, knowing what the right thing to do was, but my heart wasn't in it yet.
Okay.
And it was hard for him. He'd never met her. We were going from having complete freedom in whatever we're doing in our life, not having any children or any responsibilities, to tying ourselves to someone and constantly having a responsibility. So I applaud him for getting to that eventually, but I can't imagine being in his shoes of, hey, you're either going to be a horrible person or you're going to take this child, and, you know, giving him those options.
The thing that I kept coming back to in my mind, and I've shared this with many people, is that I couldn't be a guy. I couldn't live with myself being a guy who refused a little girl a place to go when she needed it. I couldn't tell a little girl that there was no room under his roof for her. And maybe I wouldn't have physically said that, verbally said that, but that still would have been the delivered message, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So next process, what was the next thing?
So the next thing was lots of paperwork and lots of, just meeting with people, but
interviews.
We thought it would be important that Mike meet her. So we were able to take her on two dates. Our first one to, UPaint. She got to pick something out and we got to paint with her and then Taco Bell, cause that was her favorite place. And it was a nice dynamic. You know, I have 7 nieces and nephews, so I've seen Mike with kids, but we had never had kids of our own. So you're just always worried like how the connection's going to go, but he did pretty well with her. And then we were able to pick her up after church, like a month later, a couple weeks later, and take her to lunch and everything. So he had gotten to meet her twice. And then we officially said that we would.
Well, and if I may interject real quick, when we first picked her up for that first visit, I mean, she already seemed like she had a good heart. There was, you know, I guess there's no way for me to say this other than she didn't strike me as a difficult kid. I never got the feeling that, again, this isn't going to sound nice, but I never felt like she was a bratty kid. she always seemed pleasant in that both those visits, she was very well behaved and she didn't just run off on us or anything like that. She seemed very well mannered and
Sweet. She has a sweet personality.
She does.
She's very naturally good.
She's also surprisingly observant, because that first visit that we went to Taco Bell with her, I had bought, what do you call it? Cinnabuns? Is that what they're called? The little,
Cinnamon Twist or something like that.
Well, they're the deep fried
like balls.
Balls of the twisting exterior, but they got hot cream in the middle of it.
Oh yeah. I forget what those are called.
I'm pretty sure those are Cinnabuns, but whatever, it doesn't matter. It came in a package of four or a pack of four. And I gave one to Ray. I gave one to Emma. I went ahead and took one for myself, which obviously just left us with one. Well, as Emma was sitting there talking to Ray, I just kind of turned my body a little bit and grabbed that Cinnabon off the table and just kind of slowly worked it up to my mouth with my face hidden from them and just kind of scarfed it down real quick. And probably about a minute later, Emma pointed at me with a grin and goes, "You just took that last Cinnabon." I couldn't believe she caught me like that.
Called you out, too.
She did call me out. She sure did.
Yeah.
Maybe rightfully so.
She continues to do so.
Yeah. You've got two of them in your life now.
Not much has changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it was nice getting to have Mike and Emma meet, which I think that kind of sealed the deal. You know, it's easy to say no to someone you've never met. But it was a lot harder once he got to see a good heart that she had and how just kind and just a wonderful personality she has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what happened next?
So then came even more paperwork and drug testing and all that. And so we officially got a date that we could take her, which was June 27th. 2021.
Well, and her current placement had asked her because, you know, she didn't really have much say in it, but her current placement just decided to go ahead and ask her, would you like to go and live with Mr. and Mrs. Anderson? Because, you know, at the time, that's how she saw us as. Ray was still her former teacher, Mrs. Anderson. And we didn't see her reaction, but we were told in a text message that she was excited to come and live with us. So
she screamed and said yes, and immediately went up and started packing.
No hesitation at all,
which was nice.
All right. So tell me about when she came home.
So the day that we picked her up, and I think the whole thing about loving people, it's hard. It's not easy.
It's intentional.
You know, you say, I'm going to love people. But then people get in the way, those people that you want to love get in the way. And so it's not easy to love. And so even on our way to pick her up, we were still going back and forth on, is this the right thing? We don't know if this is the right thing for us. And then, you know, tension between us because of that.
Yep. Us being Michael and Rachel.
Yes. So, but that I think for Mike, because obviously I've always been Team Foster, for Mike, that changed. When we pulled in that driveway.
That day was the turning point. We had just left services at our church. Picking her up was on the way home from our congregation. And it just made sense for us to go ahead and get her around, what was like noon or something like that. And the whole time we're driving there, and like she said, there was a little tension. I didn't say much. I just kind of...
Which bothered me.
Right. It was unspoken tension, right? So... As we're driving to the house to pick her up from her, at that time it was her current placement, several things kept going through my mind. Am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to be able to take in a child that I have no genetic attachment with whatsoever and love her? I don't even have children of my own yet. Biologically, I don't have any kids, and I'm going to take in a kid that I have no relation to, no real history with. A lot of anxiety, a lot of questions, and a lot of doubt. And what changed in the very moment, I kept asking, like, can I do this? Can I do this? Am I going to be able to do this? And as we started down her street, as we were approaching the house that she was living at, she was sitting out on the front steps of the front of the house with her backpack and her bags. And she just had this big old smile. And in that moment, my heart melted. And that's when all that anxiety changed and all of my, can I do this, turned into, yeah, I can do this. It was that moment.
And so then she came home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in the same house with you.
She walked in and said, "This feels like home."
Really?
Yeah, she did.
So right off the bat, this feels like home.
Yep.
It's felt like home. That's what she, yep.
And eventually she got to meet your families.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How'd that go?
It was good. She actually got to meet my family that day. Yep. We had made the decision that we were going to wait because my family alone is like, my immediate family is 15 people. So we were like, that might be a little much. But we ended up going to my parents' church's picnic, which was in the same town as us.
Yep.
And so she got to meet my family and things. She was a little shy, but it was outside, so she got to play and things. And it turned out to be one of our favorite pictures that we have. We were going to leave and it started to pour. And so we're running to the truck. We were all drenched and we took a picture. And it was just the best first day picture that we could have of just, we're all wet. You know, it's not that perfect, everyone looks wonderful picture that you're gonna, you know, be proud of. It's a good testament of what life with a family and loving people is. It was messy, but it was one of our favorite pictures.
It was messy, but humbling.
Yeah.
So she's in the house now. You're fostering her. Mm-hmm. Was it just all, you know, ice cream and icing then, or were there any bumps on the road?
There were good days and bad days. I mean, what was it? The first week, she had really showed herself, didn't she?
Yeah. We had a lot of tantrums and screaming and things that she was processing, and that's hard. And it's hard for us to help a child that is doing that when we didn't go through the tantrum toddler phase. You know, we're starting with a 6-year-old and someone who's dealing with stuff. And it was very hard to not take it personally. It was hard to center her when we couldn't fix her problem, you know? Yeah.
Well, and having said that, I mean, there were also a lot of good days. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just immediate issues. I mean, you would almost think that things would go downhill quick. And while there were some tough times, there were also a lot of good times. One of the families from our church have kids about her age. And when we started, what was it like the one of the first weekends that we had her with us, I think we all went and saw fireworks out in the church parking lot. And we've been able to get her friends of parents of like-minded faith. And she's taken really well to that. She really enjoys being a part of the kids programs that we have at our church. She's made really good friends with a lot of the kids about her age, or in some cases, you know, younger kids that she can mentor because she loves to do that. She loves, it's almost like she loves to be a big sister or something like that. But yeah, it wasn't a complete flawless transition, but it also could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. And I'm on Facebook groups of fostering, and, you know, we were dealing with a lot of attitude and just, she was just upset for things that we could control and couldn't. And we were seeing such bigger things on Facebook that people were sharing with their fostering. So we kept telling ourselves this could be so much worse. We need to be thankful and we need to just meet her where she is because that's parenting in general.
Yeah. And to your point, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm the father of two daughters, biological daughters. I didn't adopt them. They, you know, God gave them to us the original way. So, but I, you know, when you raise them from an infant, you see all sides of it. You have the good days and you have the terrible days and you have the terrible twos and then you have the toddler into everything and you have the tantrums and, you know, it's part of normal life. But when you're fostering a child who's come through some difficulties, they've got baggage that a lot of just other kids don't have. Right. And so you've had to work through that without any of the experience of any of the other parenting steps along the way. So whose bright idea was it to take it to the next level and adopt her?
Well, that was
the caseworker.
That was really kind of DCS asking.
Really?
Well,
and that was kind of going back when they had asked us if we would take her, you know, it was pulling teeth to get Mike to be on board to foster her. And then she came to our house, and when we're filling out all the, those paperwork and stuff, she said, you know, we'd really like you guys to be on board to adopt too.
Which I was really taken back. I was like, whoa, look at each other.
Did your eyes get to be 50 cent pieces?
It's like, you guys just got me talked into this fostering thing. And now you're telling me that I'm likely committing to,
lifetime.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so she left that day with us saying, we need to think about it, which was very hard. Lots of crying and lots of praying. And, you know, for me, I was like, okay, this is happening. And then it was looking like it wasn't. And I couldn't fault Mike for it. I mean, I got him on board to a trial run and here she comes saying no, life.
You just touched on, there was a moment after we agreed to take her, that there was a brief scare that we didn't think we were going to be able to, because there was another, I believe there was another kinship that was being considered. So
they found someone to ask. So in Indiana, if a child is removed from parents, parents have the right to throw out any name, and then DCS has to go and investigate that person to see if they're able to take that child in. So we had said yes, but then we got the call that, hey, we're looking into another family member. And this is literally while we're painting her room.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
so, okay. So they threw that out right at the beginning, but some time must've gone by and one of you must've said, hey, you remember that thing that they said to us? So when did you get there?
Well,
her case moved. That's how it all came about. We were on paper, you know, checkbox, yes, willing to adopt.
We'd actually even talked about it. Like, you know, cause it kind of, again, I'm not the DC expert here. Ray can tell you more about it than I can, but from just what I've observed, family is allotted time to get their ducks in a row, you know, get stuff in order. And DCS, and really it came down to the state, wasn't satisfied with the progress of the family, the biological family. And so that's when DCS decided to move forward with adopting her to somebody. And I think we'd even kind of discussed, like, you know, what if this does happen? Are we willing to take her? And we both had already kind of concluded up to that point we would, but that's because we both got attached. So
there was, I think that was probably at like month 8 of having her that it moved to be, you know, the possibility of that happening, the actual hearing where they stopped her plan being for fostering and going to adoption, I believe was in August or September of last year. So it was, we had had her in our home for 8 months, and it's hard to have a child in your home that could leave at any moment. Yeah. And that was hard, especially going from, you know, Mike not being on board. And now it's like, I joke, I'm like, he loves her more than I do some days. Like, he's all about it.
Well, there were a few scares. I mean, there were times where, Emma would come back from visits with family, cause you know, with DCS cases, they're allotted so many hours a week, for visits. And there were times where she would come back and say, yeah, so-and-so says that they're going to get me back. They're going to get this taken care of and that taken care of. And that I should end up there was a few times that I'm not so sure their hopes probably weren't raised, because of those statements. And there were times it made us wonder, are we going to have her much longer? Is she going to stay here with us? Is she moving along, and will we lose contact? And will all of this have been for, I don't want to say all for naught, because any kind of positive influence you can make on anybody is always for the good.
But no longer ongoing.
Right.
Bingo.
And we had to have those conversations of, you know, whether this is short term, long term, our goal was to teach her about Christ. Yep. and whatever. And in those moments where like, we're going to lose her, it was like, God entrusted us to have her, to teach her about him. And from wherever that goes, but that's our main priority, is teaching her. She came to us not knowing about God, not knowing how to pray, never been to church before. And that first time at Taco Bell, we got our food and I said, we're going to pray. She said, you're going to do what? And I said, we're going to pray to God. And so we prayed, and it's just amazing to see that, like, she's praying for our dinner now. Yeah. And she loves going to Bible class, and yep. we will put her to bed, and I look in there, and she's using her flashlight to read her Bible. Like, it's just, God has done so many amazing things in this, and we couldn't have even imagined that it would have came out of such pain and hardship, but
because this has been hard for her. I mean, you know, you're hearing our side of the story, but for her, there was a lot of uncertainty. She'd been shuffled around quite a few times before she even ended up in Ray's class. And so there wasn't a lot of stability. When you think about it, you know, the thought of being taken from your home, taken from the people who they're the only ones you've ever known, that's about as traumatic. If I had been a 6-year-old kid and that happened to me, I would have been a mess. I mean, I would have been an absolute mess. I can remember times where my mom would take me to Bible class there in Muncie. And I remember one time, she had actually, dropped me off for kids class, went into the auditorium, and in the middle of the children's class, I darted out to go to the auditorium to look for my mom. And then the teacher had gotten wise that, you know, cause I had waited for her to turn around before I darted out so I wouldn't get caught. And
so you're a little sneaky.
I was at the time, but I remember her grabbing me up from the auditorium doors, taking me, and I was kicking and screaming. And yet here she is, just as, you know, as, calm as can be and cool as a cucumber. It's just, you know, she handled it well.
We tell her, we're like, you are the bravest kid that we know. We can't imagine going through, you know, being taken away from family. But she's, unfortunately, that's what she was used to. Yeah, I think we had counted one time at dinner how many places we were all counting how many places we had lived.
Oh, how many houses we've all lived in our lives.
She had about the same number as Mike and I in our 30s. And so that's just something that she was used to. But the peace that God has given her that in this, I don't want to call it a new life because I don't want to discredit, you know, where she came from. But in this new chapter of her life, the peace that he's given her to know it's okay. And we even told her, like, no matter where you go, you're going to have God with you now. And that was something that she had never experienced before.
So at some point in time, the decision was made to go forward with adoption. Did you tell her right away, or did you hold off until you were certain things were going to happening?
We were not actually allowed to tell her when it was being discussed. And even when the decision had been made, it was still not our, we just weren't allowed to say anything to her yet.
Still a lot of legal processes and a lot of things that had to be investigated, things like that.
So her case had changed in like August, September, and then in October, her family officially released their parental rights to us. But then we weren't able to tell her until November. And so her caseworker came and, you know, we're nervous as can be. We know she loves us. We know that she wants to be with us because she had told the caseworker that time and time again. You know, she'd ask her every month when she came to visit her, are you safe? Are you getting food? Are you, you know, all these questions. If you could live anywhere, where you wouldn't live? And she would always say, here. But at 8, do you really understand the weight of those words?
Right.
And so the caseworker came to our house, went into her room and had a conversation with her. And we could hear, because it's not a big house, so we could hear what they were talking about. And we heard her say, you know, like, how would you feel about living here forever? And Emma was like, yeah, I'd love that. And she said, well, you know, Mike and Ray want to adopt you. She's like, do you know what adoption means? And she was like, yeah, it means that, like, you get to be their mom and dad. She was like, yeah. And she was like, they want to do that. And she was like, what? And so she's like, yeah. So she came out to the living room with us. And
big smile on her face.
Yeah, came right excited. Up, hugged me, and then hugged Mike. And the two things that she said that, you know, are memory book worthy is, you know, we said, we're going to be your parents now. We're going to be your mom and dad. And she was like, so that means when I have kids, you're going to be the grandparents. I'm like, I literally just turned 30. We're not doing this. And then we told her that her last name would be Anderson. And she said that it had a good tone to it.
Yeah.
Not a good ring, but a good tone.
It has a good tone to it.
That's so exactly. Yeah. She officially found out like the first week of November, and she was absolutely thrilled. And we got her a book that said, you know, adoption is both. And it's talking about adoption is both happy and sad, exciting and scary. And we wanted her to know that we acknowledge that this, it's not going to feel good all the time. And that's hard for us because we want her to be excited to be with us. But we also have to acknowledge that that's a part of her life that is going to stop. So the weekly visits with her family is going to stop. And now we are actually in a contract with her family, her biological family, to meet with them once a month. So she still gets to see them, which is a lot more than some families get to do, but we knew that it was important for her to still have that connection to them. And, you know, big picture, we're like, we could.
She's not going to have to be one of those 30-year-olds that are looking for their biological family.
Right. Yeah.
She's going to know who they are as she grows up.
Yes.
Right.
And we felt, you know, as hard as it's going to be, and it's hard. We had our first one this past Sunday, and it hurt a lot more than I thought it was going to hurt. But we see this as a way to be a light to them, to hopefully, you know, big picture, bring them to Christ, and for her to.
So, what are you telling me now? You're thinking about actually trying to love those folks too.
Yeah,
not just Emma, but
right,
everything behind Emma. You're trying to show some love there too,
if we can.
You are trying very hard. Because it's hard. It's hard to look at people that didn't choose the child that you chose and had every opportunity to. So it's messy, but Jesus dealt with a lot of messiness.
Oh, he did. He did.
Yeah.
He did. You know, that's the thing about if we really want to embrace loving our neighbor, loving our enemies. Oh, my goodness. You know, that if we're really going to fulfill that, It is messy.
Yeah.
We got to be willing to get our hands dirty. We got to be willing to get down in the mud. And, you know, I'm one of those guys, I don't eat ribs because I don't like getting stuff all over my fingers.
You're missing out.
You know what? Exactly my life.
It's like, you know, when it comes to loving people, you got to be willing to eat the ribs, right? Yeah. So that's kind of an odd way to say it, but you know what I'm saying? That's pretty awesome.
And it doesn't come natural to try to love them, because, you know, there's been times where we've, without getting too graphic or anything like that, without exposing anybody or names, we've seen people in public just, I don't know how to say this, we've just seen them make clear decisions to not have her around. And that was infuriating to me, because like Ray said, you are making a conscious decision to pass up on this sweet, innocent, pure little soul who wants nothing more than to be with you. And I take that personal. I take that very personal, because I'm at the point now where I'd give my life for that little. And I say all that, and then I have to stop and go, you know what? They have been good about being at the visits that they were assigned to be at. Mm-hmm. They have been present for those, and so they're doing the best they can to whatever capacity they can, I suppose.
The thing that sometimes we don't think about and realize is that hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And people who do things that are hurtful to others usually were very hurt themselves. And oftentimes it carries down generation upon generation.
Yep.
And so what the task for us is to look at folks who maybe infuriate us because of things and say, okay, what's behind that? And have and learn to have compassion. And so I commend you guys for your efforts to really reach beyond Emma to her biological family, and to keep that connection, and to maybe create a little bit sort of an extended family in a sense where you can have an impact on them as well.
So that's
pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. We hope.
And it's hard because, you know, I've been a Christian since I was 13, and you know, you read that love your enemies, love those who persecute you. And you're like, yeah, I'm doing that. Yeah. But no one's really.
And then you find out what that really means.
Exactly.
And you know, this past Sunday when we had our first visit with them, I finally realize that, you know, that it's to say you're going to love someone that you don't like, someone that you fundamentally like disagree with on so many things. It was finally open to me, like, oh my goodness, this is what I'd been praying for. I prayed that God use this situation to glorify him. I was praying that God use our new relationship to bring them to Christ. And I didn't realize that that came with a lot of pain and that came with so much difficulty because, you know, loving people, the hardest part of that is people. They make it so hard, but it's worth it. She prayed at that lunch in front of her parents. Yep. And it just,
her biological parents.
And so from seeing her go from, we're going to pray, well, what's praying, to, hey, do you guys mind if we pray for our lunch? And they said, yes. And then Emma says, can I pray? Yeah, you can. And so
you're going to make me cry again.
I'm doing it, so it's fine. It's just amazing to see what God has done from start. And obviously we are not in a finish. We are, lots of years, Lord willing, to go, but it just is amazing to see what he's doing. And like we said, big picture, we would love to bring them to Christ. We would love to have a relationship with them. That's not once a month. That's, you know, we're having a birthday party, please come. And I say that because that was my feelings before we even started this. And, you know, after this past Sunday, it's like, I don't want to do that. Once a month's all I can handle. I don't want to contact them. And I can see myself trying to grow through that. But loving people is not easy. And I think just like with the fruits of the Spirit, fruit needs to grow. You don't just, oh, here's an apple, you know, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Or here's love, I'm good. It has to grow. And I think that's what I'm doing right now is trying to grow that love for them, even though it's not going to be easy, but.
Well, and this has forced us to grow.
Yeah.
This has certainly forced us to grow. I tell people, I told a friend at lunch this afternoon, if you would have told me 5 years ago, if you'd have told me 10 years ago, if you would have told me at 16 years old that I was going to be an individual who had adopted a child into his life, I would have looked at you like you were nuts, because it was never anything I'd ever anticipated. It was never a dream. It was never a desire. It never entered my mind. And now here I am at 30, coming up on 34 years old, just having adopted a child a little over a week ago. And all I can say is that I can see how God worked in all of that. It wasn't my doing. It wasn't Rachel's doing. It was God's doing. And really, I can trace this all the way back to when I was 16 years old, from the time that I first became a Christian at the Fairlawn Church of Christ up in Muncie, all the way to meeting Ray when she started college, all the way to moving here, all the way into her beginning teaching. And now here we are. And there's obviously a lot more to go, like Ray said, Lord willing. But it's like, man, God was guiding my path all along the way to this point. And it's not coincidence. It just can't be. Mm-hmm. From the time that we both devoted ourselves to Christ, to the time that we met, to the time we got married, to this moment of taking in Emma and adopting her, God had all of this in store. I believe that. I honestly, truly believe that, because his plans are better than mine, and I wouldn't have planned anything this awesome out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk, as we begin to wrap up, let's talk about a week and a half ago, or whenever it was, when you had the final hearing. Walk me through that. Walk me through that. What led up to that video that I mentioned?
We had an amazing adoption attorney. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And again, it was God, because when they had said, hey, you're going to adopt her, here are some DCS attorneys that DCS has worked with,
right,
that
we would attorneys
suggest to you. And there was a list of like 30 of them, and, you know, never have used an attorney before. I'm like, what, where do we even start? Like, how do you even know if an attorney's good? And so I looked at a couple of them and I'm like, this is too much information. I don't have time. So I literally just chose one. And it was a firm that he's like second or third generation. They've been around for 30 years. And so one, he was amazing to work with.
Very straightforward.
Put some free advertisement out, Kirsch and Kirsch. They are amazing.
Yeah.
And so we didn't realize how much he was going to play into the hearing. We just thought, you know, he was going to be in charge of typing up our post-adoption agreement and everything. And so he made sure there were balloons. He sent her a gift beforehand for her to
open up the day of the adoption.
Yeah. And so brought balloons for all the kids and everything, but then just had such a happy day of asking me questions, asking Emma questions, asking Mike questions, making everybody, you know, promise to be there to support us. And then he pulls out his phone and says, we're going to make a video. Do you mind if I share this video? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That's fine. I just thought it was like a promotion. And it was one of my favorite things from the day. And there's probably like maybe now like 400 views on that. 390 of them are us. We have watched that video so many times.
I watched it probably 10 or 15 times the night that he shared that on Facebook.
I've watched it a few times too.
It's amazing because she's excited and it just encompassed the whole day.
Yep.
And swinging around and seeing all those people in the courtroom that were there to support us, that, you know, some of them drove hours to be there. Some took off work to be there.
Yep.
It was heartwarming to see that support.
Biological family, spiritual family,
her biological?
No.
Your biological.
Our biological.
We just have to clarify that when we're having this conversation.
Okay. Yeah, so this could get a little confusing here, couldn't it? Yeah. My dad had come up from North Anderson. Her family had all come up.
Her teacher was there, friends from church, but it was nice walking in and leaning down to her and saying, do you see how many people love you? And just letting her feel that of they didn't have to be here. You know, they could have just came to the dinner. They didn't have to take off work. Look at all these people who love you. And a lot of them would not have been in her life. No, I'm sorry. None of them would be in her life had it not been for what she had to go through. And without God being in that story with her of, you know, look at all these people that love you, care about you.
Some people she hadn't even met. One of my longest and best friends who was actually at work got off a little early so he could come in just to show his support. He hadn't met her in the almost 2 years that we've had her, but he still wanted to be there for that special moment.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was an amazing day.
Yeah. It was.
And it culminated in my view, obviously, unfortunately I wasn't able to be there, but watching the video, I mean, the culmination's got to be when she took the gavel and rap. I'm adopted.
Yep. As proud as could be, right?
Oh, man. Smile going from ear to ear. It was just incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, folks, I'm just so, Michael, Rachel, I'm so proud of you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And anything else you want to add or say before we wrap up the podcast?
You never know what a child in need is going through. You know, if there's a child that you're able to have any kind of special influence on whatsoever, maybe it's just some kind words, or maybe that child needs a place to stay. Obviously don't just take that child in without any permission ahead of time. That'd be weird, but you never know what kind of difference in a child's life you can make. Terry Gardner, friend from church, him and Connie sent us a card. And when I had told him, a lot of people didn't find out that we were going to foster until after we had brought Emma with us. And I remember Terry having kind of a surprised reaction, pleasantly surprised, but we got a card later that week from him, and it was a congratulations card, but it was also, they had written scripture on it. Matthew 19:14, Jesus said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And that was an aha moment for me. Yeah. The harvest for children is right for the harvesting, if you will. It's just, what better influence can you make than that of a child?
Mm-hmm. My little soapbox is, obviously not everyone is in the financial position or spiritual position or mental position to foster, but there are things that you can do. You can reach out to families that have foster kids and ask, you know, what can we provide for you? What can we do? You know, there's so much, and I am not one to accept help. And I'm trying, I love to be blessings to other people. I don't like to be the blessed. But it opened my eyes. I had to say, yes, yeah, you can bring us dinner. Yes, you can do this. And it just makes the world a difference. If you can't do the actual fostering, reach out to a family that has it, because it's not easy. And having that community makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And the verse that, you know, that kind of pushes me towards everything that I do is 1 Peter 4:10. Each of you has received a gift to use to serve others. Be good servants of God's various gifts of grace. And that's, you know, that's kind of been my focal point in everything that I've done, even before fostering, that God has given me my talents and that I use them to serve others. And this is probably our biggest service that we've done in our life thus far. And hopefully there is more to do, but.
Oh, there will be. There will be.
So
I see big things in the future for you guys.
Oh, I'm hoping so.
Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the Love Mentalism podcast.
Thanks for having us.
And for those of you who are listening out there, you know, when you hear people say, you know, love your neighbor or even love your enemy, you know, it's not an emotion. It's actual tangible things that you do. And sometimes it may mean fostering a child that you ultimately adopt, or it might mean you take a hamburger to a guy that's living under a bridge. You know, whatever it may be, take the time to get your hands dirty, get it down in that rib sauce, like we were talking earlier, and actually take some tangible steps to love the people next to you. Michael and Rachel, you've done that. I know you're going to continue to do that because that's who you are. And I feel honored to know you. And I thank you for what you're doing for Emma and for becoming her mom and dad.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Love you.
Folks out there, we'll catch you next time on the next episode of the Love Mentalism podcast.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Love Mentalism podcast. You're welcome to send comments to the host at the following email address, michael@authormichaeldekamp.com. Michael is available for limited speaking engagements, both live and virtual. Reach out for details. The music for this podcast was written and performed by Xander Fadley. You can find his work at www.xanderfadley.com. The logo was created by Blue Sign Concepts, Indianapolis. Executive producer is Bill Whitehair. Please come back for the next episode of the Love Mentalism podcast.